Very much, Michelle. Of course, this is Hans's report, but as Michelle mentioned, Hans can't be with us today, family reasons. So I refer you to paper number two, and I'll just take you through it and perhaps add some comments on the various topics as we go through. So you can see in the first couple of paragraphs that we have had a busy time since the end of July. It's always amazing when you sit down and put these things on paper. So we've issued four standards, IFRS 9, which I'll talk about a bit later, one changing the standard on agriculture, IAS 27 on separate financial statements and the equity method, and a narrow scope amendment to IFRS 10. So those have all been issued. We've also published other documents, a discussion paper on rate regulation, and of course there's a lot of controversy over that particular topic, and we're looking forward to getting, we're really trying to define the scope of what we're looking at in this paper rather than come up with solutions. We've got an exposure draft with a very long title, measuring quoted investments in subsidiaries, joint ventures, and associates at fair value. And this, if you read in brackets, is an amendment to IFRS 10, 12, IAS 27, 28, and 36, and illustrative examples for 13. Can you imagine that in all one document? And we probably call it narrow scope. I'm sure we'll have a lot of fun with the responses on that exposure draft. And then we've got a proposed interim release on the taxonomy and an exposure draft on deferred tax assets. So those are all, we're getting a lot of these, and this is to do with consistent implementation and the like, and they're coming to us generally through the Interpretations Committee asking us to do some narrow scope amendments. So having a look at the technical work plan, we did finish IFRS 9. 24th of July 2014, and there was quite a lot of celebration in the office on that day. Putting that document together at the end was quite a large task, and it was very much a team effort, including a lot of people who hadn't been involved in the project directly, but there's so many things to do when you're putting a document like that together that it's all hands to the wheel. We think it's a good standard. It's the end of a lot of work, a lot of consultation. It covers, of course, impairment with the expected loss model, a more logical model for classification and measurement, which reintroduced fair value to OCI, and what we hope is a much more practical approach to hedge accounting. We hope that as a package, it doesn't receive a lot of objection. I think it's pretty well accepted. And so we're hoping that it'll be readily endorsed around the world. We're still working, as Michelle mentioned briefly, on two major projects, leases and insurance contracts. On leases, we're still working jointly with FASB. We will have a joint meeting with them week after next on that topic. We've reached joint agreement on the major issue in relation to that standard, and that is that leases create an asset and a liability on the balance sheet. We haven't, at this stage, reached agreement on the treatment of the transaction in the profit and loss account. We'll continue working with FASB, see where we get. We should be discussing that for the rest of this year. Getting a standard out, we hope, in the first quarter next year. Is the first quarter, first six months. Insurance contract, our longest running project, we continue to work on. The complications seem to mount as we proceed. We're looking at the moment at participating contracts. That's where insurance company shares some of the profit on their investments with the policyholders. The business models for those participating contracts are quite different from company to company and from country to country. So that doesn't make it all that easy. We're trying to meet various parties' requirements or trying to meet objections. The problem we have, the more we try to do this, the more complex we make standard. So at some stage, we're going to have to review all that we've done, stand back a bit, say, have we made this too complex? Are all the exceptions and the like that we're putting forward necessary? We're continuing with the enormous amount of outreach on this project, but we're still aiming, I think, to finish discussion at the end of January. Again, you're looking at a good 6 months together. A couple of, oh, well, then we go on to, yeah, that's right, conceptual framework. You know, it, people who like the conceptual framework really love it. I think it's our most exciting project, but some people go to sleep when I mention it. We gave a 2.5-hour session on it on Tuesday at the conference, and I didn't see anybody go to sleep, but I've got to say the audience was quite small. It's only those people who are really keen. But we do have an ambitious plan for conceptual frameworks. We have a big team working on it. Board advisors on that project meet very regularly. And we're pushing ahead. We did, our first goal was to have the project finished in September 2015. Don't think there's any chance we'll meet that target, but we are looking at early 2016. Now, we get some criticism for that because some people say we're not being aspirational enough, we're not going to enough depth on some of the topics, that we should take much longer, have a more aspirational conceptual framework. We made the decision early in the piece that we weren't going to take that tactic, that we're going to try and get it done in a relatively quick time, certainly for standard setting standards, very quick time. And we're still working on that plan. I think at the end of the day, we'll put out an exposure draft early next year. I think we've come up with some quite radical changes, particularly in relation to measurement and to OCI and profit and loss. Let's see what people think about them when we put them out in the exposure draft, and then we'll work hard on that at the second half of next year, and as I say, try and get a conceptual framework out in 2016. Now, the next one is what I call macro hedging, but the real name for it is accounting for dynamic risk management, a portfolio revaluation approach to macro hedging. Another sort of snappy title, rolls off the tongue fairly easily. We've had that discussion paper out on exposure. The period ends next week, 17th of October. We've had strong support for having addressed this. Not clear to me. Very esoteric. It's very hard to get our general constituency to address this topic, but, you know, it is aimed at banks initially, but it does have an effect on people who trade in commodities or various other companies. So we're trying an outreach to encourage all those non-banking companies involved to also respond to our discussion paper. So it's quite a difficult topic, and it will be, if it goes ahead in the way addressed by the discussion paper, it will be quite a different way of accounting for risk management these organisations. Probably still quite a long way to go on that project. This is very much.
Ian, if I may, I'm relieved to know that I'm not the only one that has some difficulty with this one.
Yeah. I've read the document a few times, Michelle, and you know, there's still bits of it I don't quite get. I shouldn't say that publicly. You know, delete that.
This was a candid remark, and we need to make candid remarks publicly.
Two items that aren't in the document but which fit into this sort of category are Sharia law, which I mentioned earlier in the meeting. We're tentatively pushing ahead exploring the reporting of Sharia law contracts under IFRS. We know these contracts are out there and are very extensively used. Mainly the banking instruments of one sort or another. They are being interpreted under IFRS, these These companies are issuing annual reports each year. We've had a good look at the annual reports. I think there might be some diversity in practice on how various transactions are being interpreted. And so we've held two meetings with people involved so far. We'll probably have another one in March next year or in the first quarter next year. And then we'll try and give consideration as to how we should produce an educational paper, whether we should take an issue to the Interpretations Committee, whether we should be taking issues to the Transitional Group on Revenue Recognition, the sort of, or whether we should be going to the ISB, something like that. So the number of alternatives, they're all up for grabs at the moment, no decisions having been made. And the presentation, the very, very good presentation we've just had from our Glass colleagues, has prompted me also to think about the SME project, which is not mentioned. We're doing a review of the SME standard. The responses are in. We're discussing those responses in the board meeting week after next. And many of the points that were made in the presentation earlier have been made by other respondents, so they'll be given consideration. The balance is between trying to keep the SME standard simple and consistent, so not have too many changes, do things in a simple manner, or should it remain close as a full IFRS, whereas every time we change full IFRS, do we change the SME standard as well? Small business people might find that hard to keep up with. So there's a number of actually quite overarching debates that are more than technical. They're really on how best to deal with smaller businesses in their reporting. And decisions were made initially on the SME. I was part of that committee that did it originally. Paul Pachter, of course, was the big driver and all that. And those decisions need to be revisited. Maybe don't apply anymore. We have a very large research agenda, we have it as, what do we call it, long-term research, medium-term research, and shorter-term research. So we're working on all of them, but we're working hardest on the shorter-term research, and next hardest on the medium-term, and the longer-term might be a bit. But there's documents coming out of that. The rate regulated activities was one. The disclosure initiative, which I'll also talk about in a minute, is another. As well as that, though, as part of all that, we've reordered our website, and we have a research part of our website. We hope gives links to all sorts of research we hope is attractive to academics and the like, and we're trying to engage much more with the academic community. And in that regard, we held a research forum last week at the Said Business School at Oxford University. We had approximately 30 academics and 30 standard setters and various other people. I think I've got those numbers approximately right. I didn't go to the whole day. I watched some of it on a video link. There were about 6 papers presented and commented on, and all of them were related to our work. And so we're trying to say to academics, we want to engage with you. We want you to do work that relates to what we're doing and work that we can use. And I must say, we're not meeting resistance at all in that point of view. And this is the first, I hope, of a number of forums. The next one will be possibly next year. We're thinking maybe in Hong Kong. So this will be an ongoing thing where reviewed papers will be brought to the forum, discussed and commented on. And I think it's a very good initiative. Our disclosure initiative, it's in a number of parts. Again, it's been given quite high priority. I think it's moving ahead very well. A lot of demand for it. We've heard about, again, in the last presentation, too many disclosures. This initiative isn't starting from that premise. It's starting from how can we do disclosures better. It might mean less, or it might mean more. We hope it doesn't mean too much. Or it might mean rationalising, or it might mean reordering. But there's a number of ways we can tackle that problem. Now, engagement with investors is the next part of this. Oh, I've nearly run out of time, Michelle. Get into trouble. We've been reviewing our engagement strategy with investors. We have some ideas, which were discussed in this meeting, but are still formative, I think, at this stage, how we might better do that. But I think enough for me to say that it's high on our priorities to engage with investors, keep our engagement very proactive. The Accounting Standards Advisory Forum has also been commented on. From the technical point of view, this is a very, very good initiative. We do get very, very good feedback. ASAF, not everybody agrees with everybody, but we get the points of view. And that's what we want. We actually don't want them all coming saying, yes, this is a good idea, or no, it's a bad idea. We want the nuances, and we want the debate to be broad. And it is a good broad debate. And we keep reviewing as to whether we're doing it the right way or not. We had a good meeting in September. We'll have another meeting in December. Using IFRS internationally, I think Michelle's talked about this a bit. We keep updating our profiles. More and more countries are using standards. We've got to 138 out of 47 or something like that. I'd like to underline something Michelle said about the advances being made in Japan, India and China. And if we think of those three countries together, three of the largest economies in the world, moving on relatively parallel basis. So I think this is tremendous advancement for IFRS to have those three countries moving, and might think about how we might coordinate or try to coordinate them. But I think we should be very proud of the fact that three of the largest economies in the world are moving our way in a very positive manner. Consistent application of IFRS globally. I'll just talk briefly about the transition, the joint transition resource group for revenue recognition. So as the title says, it's joint with FASB. Jim Croker, the vice chairman of FASB, and myself chair it. We've had one meeting. We've just produced a review of that meeting for internal consumption at this stage. And we're due to have another meeting before the end of October. Not a decision-making body, so it's a very funny body. We talk a lot about the new standard and any problems people think they might be having with it. We hope the outcome will be that after the discussion, it becomes clear that the standard does handle the particular problem we're looking at. Sometimes it may not, in which case this group wouldn't make a decision as to what should happen, but would refer it to what they consider the appropriate body, probably the Interpretations Committee or the two standards bodies. Maybe about time. It won't be more than another hour. And we've also decided to set up a transition resource group by ourselves, in this case for impairment on financial instruments. I should stress we don't want to see these two being seen as a precedent. We have not made a decision to set up a transition resource group for every project we have on the book. We'll take them as we go one by one. We'll also see how these ones work without doing anything further. I think I can move forward quickly from there. We've got some notes on the education initiative, and you'll see that we're very widespread for the team we've got. Our education team's made up of four people, I might say. It's absolutely amazing what they achieve. And the last but not least comment is on the effects analysis consultative group. Finalised its report, we'll be publishing that. And we hope that that also will be a great step forward on the way that we set standards and part of our due process. So, Michelle, any questions if anybody's got them? But no, thank you.
Thank you, Ian. You are absolutely on time, but
I was afraid you would develop too long, so I took the risk to send you this small paper. Any questions? Any questions to Ian before we move to the DPOC?